This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com. Here we are, episode 91. I cannot believe it's already been 91 episodes.
I can.
but it has, and we are here, and it is an odd-numbered episode, and so we are delighted to have a guest on the show. So as always, I am your host, Andrew, and I'm joined by my lovely wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And this week, we have on the show, Max Davey. How are you doing today, Max?
I'm very well, thank you.
So Max is like our across-the-pond counterpart, right? So Max, you help run a website, YouTube channel called Games for Families, where you talk about kind of a lot of the same stuff that we talk about with the Family Gamers.
Yeah, it's. I think we're much less regular in our output and probably much less professional. But yeah, it's not dissimilar. I think we have a more video orientated output, but other than that, I guess broadly so.
Right, and I love that when you do some of your video game reviews, you've got the kids on with you to kind of talk about what they liked and didn't like about certain games. I really like that part.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
So the reason why we asked you on the show is because you had shared something in the Family Gamers community, which by the way you can get to at thefamilygamers.com/community. about screen time. So you guys posted a video talking about screen time maybe a week or two ago, and I thought you had a lot of really excellent points. And so I asked if you'd come on and we could do like a little bit of a screen time redux conversation, because we talked about screen time with, like, I want to say it was episodes like 4 and 5 or something like that.
It was a long time ago.
So the first thing that you kind of talk about in the video is, and I don't want to rehash the whole video, but we'll use it as a launching off point, is talking about screens. Like, why are screens a problem? Like, there's this sort of, sometimes I think when there's a debate that doesn't necessarily have a right answer, but people get really emotional about it, I term them as like religious debates. and I think the screen time debate sort of qualifies as one of those topics. And so I'll just throw the question to you. Oh, I should mention, this would be relevant for me to mention, that you are a licensed pediatrician.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
So you've got some, you know, cachet in this conversation.
I've done some reading, I suppose that's what I would say. I suppose that's worth mentioning. And I think it's also worth mentioning that I most of my practice is in kind of ADHD, autism kind of areas.
Okay.
And so I see a lot of kids who use a lot of screens for lots of different reasons. And I have a lot of families in my clinic who are very worried about the relationships between screens, particular screen activities, but also screen activities overall, and their children's behavior. So I think that's a very important sort of area of concern for me. And I also do some work with the Royal College of Paediatrics and on the health promotion. So again, that's given me another kind of into this topic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, all right. So now we'll take that step back and say, so why are screens a problem? / are screens a problem?
Well, I think we are. You're right to suggest we are somewhat in the middle of a moral panic. But I think families are really conflicted, because on the one hand, there is so much out there which is sort of telling them that screens are bad and that they shouldn't be using them. But on the other hand, family life is very difficult in the modern world with a complete lack of screens. I think it's very hard. And so you have messages like the American Academy of Pediatrics, who say, you know, no screens at all before two. But if you have lots of older children in the house,
that's impossible. Yeah,
it's almost impossible to achieve. And you know, when people get messages from these august institutions which are unachievable, then it's a very uncomfortable thing, because everyone pretty much wants to be the best parent they can be. But if they're, you know, being set up to fail, then that you're already in a quandary.
Yeah.
But to go back to your question, so go on.
I was going to say, I have a specific example that I can point out, which is our pediatrician, every time we go in, talks about, you know, how much screen time, whatever, and says, you know, really shouldn't be more than an hour a day. So our oldest, who is in fourth grade, has over an hour worth of homework that has to be done on a computer every day.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that,
absolutely,
that is not the same thing.
No. And I think that the general feeling, and when we come out with guidance later this year from the Royal College, we will not be advocating a cutoff because there's no evidence for it. I think, you know, if you look at, there's some quite nice graphs from some work that's been done in Oxford on well-being against the amount of screen time. And that's the big worry, is that, you know, the more screen time you get, the lower your well-being, and the more the behavior problems come on, and the worse is academic. And all of these cases have been made about academic progress and so forth. But actually, you can get through quite a lot of screen time on a weekday before that there's any impact on well-being or anything like that. So you can get up to sort of 3 hours of video games before you start to have a measurable effect on a negative effect on well-being. So there may be reasons to restrict screen time, and we'll go on to those, but a general concern about well-being is usually not it. And if the child does have a problem, if the child is, you know, spending 6 hours on Call of Duty or whatever until the small hours, that is obviously a problem, but it's a problem for all sorts of reasons. What are they trying to avoid about family life, and how, you know, how much sleep are they getting? All of those things are really important.
Right. And so there's this kind of complicated interplay between screen times becoming a substitute for other
anything.
Things, whether those are, and I think that, you know, ultimately this is the point that both you and we drove to, ultimately when it exists as a replacement for, you know, interpersonal communication, that's kind of when it really becomes a problem. But
yeah,
you know, I mean, especially, and you know, not to blame Apple, but the rise of such natively understandable devices like the iPad and the iPod Touch, and even the sort of pseudo educational apps that have been made available,
or truly educational,
in the case of like Houghton Mifflin, it really blurs those lines and makes it super hard. Like we have a lot of the Osmo iPad collection. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but
we're not an Apple household, I'm afraid.
So it's basically it's just this little mirror that kind of clips on the top, and it allows digital recognition of you know, alphanumerics, you know, tangrams. So it basically replaces tangrams and tells you when you're, you know, provides that that interaction on doing things correctly and not or not. There's simplified coding applications that use symbol recognition to you know, allow children to basically program logic.
Yeah, there's even a drawing program that basically you're drawing on paper in front of the iPad, but because it's using this camera, this mirror over the camera, it is more or less seeing what you're drawing as long as you're doing it on white paper.
Right.
And representing it on the screen.
So suffice to say, there's lots of these sort of things that really blur the lines between, you know, what I think historically has been classically defined as screen time, which was almost exclusively video games, and things that have an actual tangible benefit beyond just entertainment. And those things, I mean, get even more furthered when you talk about things like Minecraft, which at least ostensibly allow kids to explore their creativity while in a digital environment.
Yeah, and I think there's a huge difficulty with the very concept of screen time now. So if, you know, I've played through recently in this sort of board gaming context the new app campaign for Imperial Assault. Now, was that screen time? We were interacting with our phone, but also playing a game of Imperial Assault. What is, sure, you know, with my 8-year-old, what is that? So there's all of these problems, but I think while the concept of screen time kind of doesn't make sense, people still talk about it, so we should still talk about it in a way, even though we know that the borders are really fuzzy. Yeah. I think you said quite a few things that need unpacking, actually, to be honest.
That's my problem.
It's not a lot. I mean, I think it is very difficult to be clear what is beneficial screen time and what is not beneficial screen time. There's lots of claims made by app manufacturers about the benefits of their particular programs. And I think that, you know, you have to put your medical skeptical hat on and say, actually, this evidence is not very good. And it may be that there's a lot of claims being made that aren't actually backed up by particular evidence. It's a little bit, mm-hmm. probably a little bit better than the claims made by shampoo adverts, but not much. Yeah. So, you know what I mean? That sort of, you know, 8 out of 10 women want this shinier hair thing. It's a little bit better than that, but not much. So I think that it's difficult to be absolutely clear scientifically what is good screen time, what is not good screen time. However, as a parent, we all know what is a complete waste of your time, i.e. watching someone else play a video game on YouTube, which I've never understood how why that is of any use to anyone, versus, you're quite right, watching, we have some great, you know, kids' TV, all the sort of stuff you're describing on the iPad, which does appear to teach skills. The caveat on that is that doesn't seem to be good evidence that teaching skills on an iPad allows you to transfer those skills into the real world. You may transfer those skills into another online environment, fine, but transferring those kind of spatial skills or planning skills to the real world, the evidence isn't there at this point, which is really interesting. So you come back to, well, if you're going to teach real world, physical world, executive function, so planning and attention and all of those interactions, you need to do it in the real world, i.e. tabletop gaming rather than screen time. So that's where I come from in that side of things, that yes, these things look great, but we really need to be very careful about it. And the last thing I wanted to unpack about it is, these are very compelling experiences for kids, aren't they? The iPad games and all of that. And actually, getting them off the screens is often such a problem that it's one of the things that parents really fear about letting them do it in the first place.
Yep.
Yeah, and that actually, I think there's a lot of sort of different strings attached to that, right? So one part of it is, you know, a lot of these things are really born from an environment where, like the advertising environment, where it's designed in such a way to make you crave the next thing, whatever that thing might be. And so when you're playing through, and you know, I think we've all been there when we're reading a really, really good book, right? And sure. the chapter ends and you want to know what happens next, or you're watching a TV show.
I was going to say, where do you think binge watching came from?
Right. You're watching a TV show and the TV show, you know, right before commercial or whatever, some momentous event happens, or before the end of the episode, something happens and you want to find out what happens next. And a lot of these kinds of paradigms come into play with video games too. And kids are so frequently left wanting the next thing. And even adults too. I mean, yes. This isn't limited to children, but
no, absolutely.
Yeah, they're just so well trained and focused in that way.
But kids don't have the maturity to realize that they're being played and
they're
sucked
being manipulated,
in on
purpose. Right? Some adults don't either.
Well, and they don't have the maturity even to realize sometimes that they need to stop for things like bodily functions, bathroom, eating.
Yeah, I see that a lot in my clinic, actually. Boys, particularly with ADHD, who will wet themselves in no other time, but only when they're on the video game, because it's so compelling. And they get into this state of – you're familiar with the state of flow that's been talked about in psychology, which is that kind of perfect state of being in the zone, of being just stimulated enough that you are at your absolute peak. And in a way, video games are designed to create that state of flow, of just kind of everything coming perfectly, mm-hmm. and coming off that is hard. It is hard.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so in your video, and again, I don't really want to rehash your whole video. I would encourage people to check out the show notes and click on the link and go watch the video. You talk about what that's like, that process of, you know, getting kids off of, you know, maybe some of those more negative screen time experiences. And number one, the reality that you can't simply say, and this I know is something that I'm very tempted to do a lot of the time, just turn it off and I'm not going to provide a substitute for your activity. You just need to not do that one thing. And then it creates a very antagonistic environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing is the, you know, the need there that, that we as parents have to say, look, if we're going to put into place restrictions, on this thing that obviously our children enjoy doing, we need to create realistic expectations even within ourselves that whatever the replacement activity is something that is, you know, suitable for number one, the amount of time that's being taken, and number two, the type of time that's being taken, right? So if your kids are staying up too late playing video games and they just need to sleep more, well, then you have to be a parent, and then that might be an uncomfortable conversation. But if it's Saturday afternoon and there's nothing going on, it can't be as simple as, you know, just turn this thing off and figure out something else to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've got to not be scared of children being bored as well. I think it's kind of a little bit of a cliche that, you know, boredom fosters creativity, but it can be true in the right frame of mind. I think as immediate as you come off this kind of flow state, this state of being in totally all of your attentional needs catered for in this video game when you're completely in it, then to suddenly in the moment go, right, go and do something else is quite hard. But actually, if you've structured the day and you have days, times when there is kind of nothing time, I don't think we need to say that that's a bad thing, because kids do come up with some amazing stuff in that nothing time. And I think it's important that they have it. Way.
Yeah.
I know we're getting a little bit off screen time, but I do think we don't have to go one-to-one replacement with structured activities which are kind of game-like for them.
No, I actually agree with that quite a bit. We rather like punting our kids outside and watching whatever driveway games they come up with.
The weather's not so good here, so I don't really punt them out this time of year, but I mean, maybe late.
We're getting there.
later in the year.
We're hoping soon.
We're flirting.
Oh, I know. Tomorrow, apparently.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about, I guess, two more things that I think will be helpful for our listeners. One of them is, if we're not necessarily trying to push our kids off of screen time, there certainly are certain things or activities or games or whatever that that would be a little bit more constructive. You know, we mentioned some of the more educational related things, and that's not necessarily what I'm talking about. We did mention Minecraft at one point. Mm-hmm. But as we alluded to before, like a huge part of the issue that you know, we have with screens is that it sort of usurps interpersonal relationships.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of games out there that maybe they're couch co-op games, or they're, you know, local multiplayer games or things like that, that though they're not as good as, you know, a board game for
something where you're sitting down and looking at each other's face.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you know, going outside and playing or whatever, might be maybe better options.
Yeah.
That would facilitate some of that. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that can happen. I agree with you. I don't think it's as good. I think the main interaction is with the person on the screen. And I think particularly, with the avatar on the screen. And I think particularly if you're trying to foster with children the ability to have kind of interpersonal relationships with all of their kind of depth, that the couch co-op isn't great. But I do like them. They're great fun. And also they give you something you've done together that you can then talk about, and that is really good.
Right.
So I am pro them.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah, we are a Mario Kart Super Smash Brother family.
Yeah.
So when my brother and sister come into town, we usually set up the kids with aunt and uncle, and we get involved sometimes too. And
yeah,
they still harken back to those times. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and they are fun. You know, you play we play Overcooked a reasonable amount, although that's super, super stressful once you get beyond the very basics. But again, it's you know, look, remember that crazy time that happened and we got absolutely nuked by the game. We play a few things. I don't, to be honest with you, I'm not really quite sure what the game's called. The kids just say, come and play this, and I come and be terrible at it, and they all laugh.
Right.
And I wander off again. So I'm not completely sure what I'm playing half the time. But that's my role, isn't it? That's beating dad is always fun.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about board games. So let's talk about some board games that maybe emulate some of those video game like experiences that could be helpful. And this is something again that you touch on in your video. So I don't want to go over absolutely every single one of them.
That's good because I can't remember half the ones we talked about.
But we'll touch on a couple sort of topics. So let's talk about smashing things.
Yeah.
Smashing things is always fun.
Yeah.
And of course, there's that new Rampage movie that's coming out with The Rock.
So. Yeah, that doesn't look terrible.
Not at all. It looks almost as good as Battleship was.
Yes, very much that.
So can you give us a board game recommendation for maybe something that would kind of capture that larger than life battle smashing kind of?
Well, it's the game that used to be called Rampage. I would always go for that. It's now goes under the name Terror in Meeple City, which is an awful name. For a really fun game. I don't know if you guys know it, and I can't remember if you've talked about it, but it's essentially flicking monsters around the board and dropping them, physically dropping them on little cardboard buildings and breaking the buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, it is that level of tactility and fun, and you can flick your feet at other people's monsters and knock them over and knock their teeth out and take their teeth and eat their teeth. And it's that kind of kind of family friendly, although, you know, the little bit of an edge to it, if I'm completely honest, knockabout fun. And one of the lovely things about that game is that it can be played at this incredibly basic dexterity level. But if you put in a few of the rules and the rule book back in, you've actually got a little bit of a strategy game, which you need to think about. It's an absolute favorite. Me and Paddy, my partner in the Games for Families, we both love it.
Yeah, I am shockingly bad at flicking games, I've discovered.
Yeah.
I just cannot do it accurately. So that would probably be something pretty hilarious for my children to beat me at. What about racing games?
Well, I mean, I would always go I think the current sort of gold standard family racing game is Downforce. I think it's a tremendous game. I think it scales from 2 to however high it goes, up to 6, I think.
6, yeah.
Extremely well. I can't fault it. I run quite a few board game clubs at my local school, and there's a youth club that we do with my wife's church, and it's an absolute standby. You can always get it out, and you will always get some fun out of it. It's not everyone's favorite game, but it is if you're somebody who's engaged in getting kids into games, you've got to have a copy of Downforce up your sleeve. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Did you see that they're coming out with a kind of an expansion board with
different
tracks on it?
Am I dreaming, or was there one that looked kind of neon and a little bit kind of Tron like?
I don't even remember. I just saw that there was a because we don't have the game. One of our writers does, so I'm sure
he's
picking it up. So I get to experience it at his house. But hey, it's one less game for me to buy.
And at this point, we have to basically fight the kids for it.
That's like, true.
We want to play Downforce. No, we want to play.
Yeah,
so
it's an issue.
Oh, it's a super game. Super game.
Let's see. What other kinds of kind of video game, I guess, like world building, city building?
Yeah, this one's not that easy, because actually one of the wonderful things about video games is it hides all of the complication of city building under the hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, because the city, as an equivalent city building game in a board game, is often quite a meaty proposition. I mean, obviously Carcassonne is a city building game essentially in many ways, and we forget about it because it's kind of old now and we're all kind of into the new stuff, but it is really good. But a slightly newer game that I really enjoy is Quadropolis.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because it's a Days of Wonder production. And so it's beautifully produced and very kind of visually appealing. Mm-hmm. It's a fairly simple game, but again, there's that sort of, there is something there to kind of get hold of as an adult, as to kind of think about and puzzle over.
Right. And, You know, I have often described one of my favorite board games, I'm going to get laughed at by Anitra, as basically Civilization II, the board game. If you're into that kind of, you know, empire building sort of thing, and that's
just one more turn.
Yeah, that's through the ages. It's a heavier game. It's not a game for kids because it's inappropriate. It's a heavier game.
But
it absolutely to me feels pretty much exactly like Civilization II. It's because as the Civ games, you know, as the newer ones came out, they got progressively more complicated. You know, you talked about how city building in analog is a much weightier proposition.
Yeah,
it's much the same way with this. So like through the ages, a new story of Civilization, not the old one, is kind of my go-to for that level of depth where, you know, you really have to, there's a lot of resource management and you're progressing through time and all of this stuff. I would throw that one on the list as well. I mean, do you have anything else that you think would kind of fit in that kind of a genre?
I think I'm still looking for the kind of build your own city and build it up and which is a family friendly, I actually made one, but that's probably not going to make for compelling podcasting. But actually, I would. It is something that you can just kind of mock up, and it was a rather fun thing to do. But I think there's a gap in the market for a family friendly kind of Civilization, like, because the kids love it. It's a story. They're generating this story of their own city, their own people. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure we've quite got there with something that requires app integration to really get into the market of me and my kids playing.
But only if you don't look at the screen, just if you listen to it.
Well, you're allowed to look at the screen occasionally.
Yeah, I'm only kidding. All right. Well, I mean, I don't have anything else on my list. Anitra, do you have anything that you would like to add?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. What about you, Max? Do you have anything else that you'd like to add that maybe we didn't touch on? I know I kind of drove the structure of the conversation, so I just want to
make sure it's open. I think my take home for screen time is you ask yourself three questions. One is, are you in control of your children's screen time? Yes, no. Two is, are you able to do the things that you as a family find important? So are you able to have meals together where you're interacting, or whatever else is important to you as a family, make your own decisions? And the third thing, which we haven't really touched on, is, are they getting enough sleep? The more we know about sleep, the more important it looks for everything to get the right amount of sleep for you or for your child. So those are my three rules that I sort of bring up in clinic all the time, and I think they work reasonably well in just allowing people to set their own limits. But there must be kind of parameters around screens.
So how do we get our children to understand that because of them, we're not getting enough sleep?
I think you just have to appeal to their better natures.
I'm only kidding. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Max. We really appreciate you coming on.
No problem at all.
Where can people find you guys online?
So we are Games for Families. That's all one word with a four in the middle. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're just around, really. Do contact us if you want to have a chat about, you know, anything we talked about today, or check out some of our increasingly stupid videos that we put up.
I love the videos. I especially like the end of the video we're mentioning where you lost video, so you just showed your dog playing in the snow.
Yeah, I did.
That was fantastic.
He does like the snow.
All right. Well, we are on the internet as well. You can find us at thefamilygamers.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at FamilyGamersAA.
Don't forget, you can also join our Facebook community at thefamilygamers.com/community. Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. Tell your friends about it. Leave us a rating and maybe even a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe.
And as always, we would love to thank our sponsor, Wild East Games. You can head over to wildeastgames.com to see all the stuff that they've made. The expansion for Pirates of the Caribbean Farm is out. And I hope that you went to PAX East and were able to check out the Wild East Games booth and find their new game, Slapdown.
The Unfriend Maker.
The Unfriend Maker. So that's going to be it for all of us this week. Until next week,
play games with your kids.